Hello. Whoa, I was going to say patrons. We're not on the Patreon. We're on YouTube, so like and subscribe and do all the things. Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back to rewind this episode of season 47. It's where we talk about the episode that just aired, but in the past. And we're taking our favorite outwit, outplay, outlast moments from the episode and, you know, talk about past moments. So it's going to be a lot of fun. What was your overall thoughts on episode 3, John?
I really enjoyed this episode of Survivor. I don't know why. Like, I'm at a point where I was a little tentative about the premiere this season, but these last two episodes have been completely bought into Survivor 47 at this point. This season feels so fun. It is just nailing everything I want out of a Survivor season at this point. It's giving us fantastic character moments. It's giving us those camp life moments. It's giving us strategy and gameplay and all of these things. This episode had moments that had me bursting out laughing. I know, like, Rome can be a bit of a divisive character for some, but that entire segment of him fishing was so funny to me. It felt so great seeing someone just so confident in themselves and it rubbing everyone absolutely the wrong way, especially with like the irony of him saying that, you know, oh, TK was like too full of himself and then doing it himself. It's so great. This is so fun. I think we're finally getting a little bit more from these characters that we weren't really seeing of. We got a lot of like Genevieve in the episode, not many Genevieve confessionals, but like Genevieve was there and we got a little bit more of her character a bit. We got a bit more of Sierra. We're still kind of lacking on Caroline of it all, but I quite enjoyed this episode. How did you feel about it?
I really liked it as well. But what we found while trying to plan our podcast out here was it was very unique in its own right, where it was hard to find some, you know, discussion topics to talk about. But I think we nailed it. Or didn't, let us know. But we definitely nailed it with the episode that we are going to be watching over on the Patreon tomorrow. That will be David versus Goliath. It's a big one here. And it is episode 6. Aren't Brochachos just adorable? So it's right after the jacket episode. And it has so many things that relate to 47. It's crazy. So become a patron and check us out over there tomorrow. But we ready to get into our outwit, outplay at last moments, John?
Absolutely. I really like the moments that we've chosen this one and what we're going to talk about. So I'm definitely going to get into them.
All right. So outwit, we are talking about choosing your alliance based on advantages. So we see in this episode that Teenie and Keyshawn really choose who they want to align with, be it Asia and Saul or Genevieve and Rome, based on Rome's advantages that he got, one, the idol, and two, now the steal a vote. So we each have some different moments. John, I'm going to have you start first because you actually have the oldest example and maybe the first?
Potentially. So just like diving into this moment in 47, how much do you think this was actually decided? Because, like, the problem is, it's like, as of this point, right, like, we're 3 episodes into this season, we don't have any confirmation from the castaways or anything because, you know, they have their non-disclosures and stuff that they have to pick, their NDAs that they can't break and tell us more about this. But how much do you think this decision from Teenie and Keyshawn was actually advantage-driven? And not just like they were vibing more with like this Rome Genevieve group.
I don't know, because like you see Teenie in episode 1 saying like, let's wait for Asia to get here. And when Genevieve was like, I really like Rome. And she's like, maybe we have Asia as our 4th. And we see Genevieve kind of, well, we don't see it. We assume it. Genevieve is really pushing for Rome. And so that makes each foursome with Genevieve and Rome on the one side and Saul and Asia on the other. So I feel like the advantages really helped Teenie's decision, but, you know, she knew where the advantages were and where they were going. So I'm pretty sure if he was going to play it for Genevieve, Teenie would have known. Mm-hmm. So they could have voted Genevieve out here easily. And then what is Rome's steal a vote going to do?
Yeah, and maybe like the steal vote is enough to push it over, where the steal a vote on a tribe of five is actually like a very powerful tool because you only need one other person. So maybe that's the case. But I guess it's also in conjunction with the fact that Rome has an idol that has to be played at this tribal council. So you know that Rome's safe there. But I don't know. I just look at it and I'm wondering, like, the strategic, like, how much this decision is made based on these advantages, especially because we don't normally see, and I think you'll notice this when we come to our, like, our discussion points of, like, what we think in the past kind of relate to this, we don't normally see this perspective in the edit regarding deciding Alex based on advantages. Usually what we see in the edit is somewhat like we do with the first example I'm going to bring up in Cook Islands, where Yule has the super idol, like tells the rest of his like alliance, hey, I have this, I'm going to use it and flip Penner to our side. We see the strategic side of things more when we, mm-hmm. when we're talking about advantages determining allies and things like that. And Yule does in fact strategically tell Penner, hey, I have this, come vote with us, you have to be with us, because you can't get me out. And it really just ends up kind of really dictating the rest of this.
Yeah.
At that point, because all of a sudden Penner becomes enemy number one because he flips and everything. And mm-hmm. it's so fascinating because we're seeing it from the other side, right? Like, this would be like if Rome is intentionally telling these people, hey, you're doing this because it is in my best interest, not in your best interest. But Rome's not doing that. Rome is sharing. I mean, we saw last episode, Rome tells Teenie about the idol, and then Teenie tells Keyshawn, which is, like, wild. Still wild and baffles that we didn't get any, like, real big, like, moment from Rome in a confessional about how he felt mm-hmm. about that situation. But, like, we see Rome telling that as, like, yes, it is an attempt to make an ally, but it's not, like, handcuffing someone strategically, like this moment was in Cook Islands, where Yule is like, you have to be with us. And granted, a lot of that comes down to the fact that this was a super idol. It's played after the votes are read.
Yeah.
But it's,
yeah, this it's idol is one of those things. Is great in Cook Islands because it is used after the votes, but at the same time, they Raro was so big that they could have split the votes and done something yeah. where, like, Penner didn't have to flip. They could have flushed the idol, which Plan Voodoo was a thing in this season. Yeah. So they could have used Plan Voodoo to just a little bit later on in the game.
Yeah, it's one of those. But to be fair, the Raro tribe didn't have the people who knew about Plan Voodoo there in order to really facilitate everything and know that they were supposed to split the votes, right? Because that was not the Raro tribe
who Penner, was privy to that. Penner and Candace were privy to it.
Oh, I suppose they were. That's right. But, oh well, didn't matter. Jonathan was, honestly, Jonathan Penner was like so like flip-floppy in the season two, and it's what makes, honestly, such yeah. a compelling character in this season. Like,
it's only fitting for him to just yeah. like flip back to Yule after flipping away in the mutiny.
Exactly. And the bigger thing here is that Yule and Becky recognize that. They mm-hmm. recognize, hey, we know that we can get Penner on our side here. And it's really their only play in this situation. It's really smart. And it shows like the strategic acumen that this pair brought to the game in Cook Islands. And it, again, because this is so early in the inception of the idol, this is the only the third season with an idol. Again, we're still in the super idol phase of the mm-hmm. game. So it's one of those things where being able to come up with this strategy as your play here based on your social bonds with people is it's just really impressive. And again, it's, we saw Teenie kind of doing the same thing where Teenie's evaluating based, again, based on the edit, based on what we're seeing there when she has that conversation with Asia and is like, oh, Asia doesn't seem willing to vote out Saul. So like, she's not flexible. So we can't really work with her moving forward. And however true that was and however impactful to that, this vote that was, like, it goes to show the combination of the knowledge of advantages and social acumen and your ability to just determine how the other tribe members that you are working with are thinking can really propel you forward in the game and help make your decision. It is what everyone should be looking at in their decision making when it comes to Survivor, but we don't see it as clearly as we saw it in 47. And as we saw it back in Cook Islands in this situation, again, on like two kind of opposite sides of the perspective.
Yeah. So my moment is a lot more recent. And it's like slightly different, but really interesting where Ryan in Heroes, Healers, Hustlers, Ryan finds this advantage and he gives it to Chrissy, wills it to Chrissy, and basically grants her immunity from the first tribal council if she plays it. It's like a one tribal council idol. And it's a secret only these two know about, and they happen to swap on the same tribe. And so that immediately Ryan turns to Chrissy and was like, I sent you that advantage because I believe in you. I want to work with you. And then they take that all the way to the end. So like, this is something with this alliance based on an advantage that who knows if they would have worked together otherwise at that swap, where like they had this common ground already when they hit this swap, rather than like, oh, we voted together, let's just keep voting together. They had this little secret that bonded them through the rest of the game, and that is like an insanely strong and strategic way to use this advantage.
Yeah, and I think that is kind of similar to, like, it's not similar in the fact that it's like the volunteering of information, obviously. I think in HHH, there is no downside to Ryan being like, yo, Chrissy, I gave this to you.
Oh, yeah, right? I don't see.
And it's kind of like forced by production, by the fact that like you have to give this to the tribe that goes to tribal council and everything. Mm-hmm. And it happens to work out that like he gets swapped onto this tribe.
I mean, that's the brilliance of it is they do swap together, where like if without that swap, that who knows if they hit the merge together. And then he's like, hey, I gave that thing to you. And does it still work? Does it still, you know, keep them going? But because it was at an early enough point in the game, this advantage that they had really pivoted their relationship and pivoted how Ryan and Chrissy looked at their other relationships in the game with their OG hustlers and OG heroes.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And more importantly, I think what it does here is I think you have a good point. I think, like, if they didn't swap together, would this have happened? Probably not. But, like, the swap happens early enough in the season that their relationships aren't quite strong enough with their original tribes. And, like, that is, again, one of those things that, like, in the new era, we don't see swaps that often. And why we want to see swaps is because we want to see how things go. And we're at a point now where, like, with, for the first time ever, all three tribes going to Tribal Council in episodes 1, 2, and 3, this is the perfect time for a swap because there are no uneven numbers. Or like swap next week and give us two tribes. Just saying, Survivor, that could be fun. But because of that, though, it's this knowledge and this ability to share. And the new era is kind of working in a world where that sharing of information is becoming harder and harder because, as we've seen so far this season, these advantages are only good for one vote. Yes. Chrissy's was also only good for one vote, but the difference in it is that it was willed to her by someone else, right? These one-time idols, I think, we might be getting to a point where like the correct move in Survivor moving forward is to use one-time idols on people you know are going home in order to save them and build more trust.
Yeah, exactly. Or like have them be like, oh, you found an idol, but you have to will it to someone on the other tribe, or mm-hmm. you have to give it, you know, like in Winners at War, you had to give half of the idol to another person. So it really like bonds two people together, or two plus people together, rather than like what we see, you know, with Sam or with Sue and Gabe or with Rome and Teeny, where it's still like Rome's, Sam's, and Gabe's idols mm-hmm. that other people know about. Like, if you have more of an impact on, like, if I just throw this in the fire right now, your idol is gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the really interesting thing about this entire situation of 47 here with Teeny and Keyshawn deciding to go with Rome and Genevieve here is to see how they act the next time that group has to go to tribal council, assuming mm-hmm. we don't have a swap, because we rarely get swaps nowadays. If they do go back to tribal council, how do they react? Are they still firmly in this Rome and Genevieve camp? I think they have to be now, because they've left that pair in with the seal of vote. So like literally Genevieve and Rome just control the next vote if this vote tribe goes back to tribal. Mm-hmm. But when the advantages are gone, are Rome and Genevieve still people that they want to work with moving forward?
Yeah, we'll find out. Maybe I would love a swap, but we'll see. So Outplay, we were on the struggle bus because this challenge and whatever the journey was left something to be desired. So we used that as fuel. We used that to talk just... This seemed like such a generic Survivor challenge. Swim, jump off this, climb up this, and jump off again. Balance beam, keys. And it's just like, I think they took all of the wrong elements of things and smacked them together. Like, we've seen this challenge how many times in the new era? Like, it's...
Pre-season?
Something like that. And it's like this exact challenge where you swim, climb up, jump off, climb up, jump off, and like balance beam. You know,
there were keys this time. I don't think we've had keys so far on a balance beam so far in this challenge, but it's essentially the same thing. Ending with that puzzle too.
Yes.
Like a puzzle.
How many marine life jigsaws have we had? We have had seashell, sea turtle, coral, manta ray. Like
in 41, we had that like buoy puzzle that Heavy just knew how to solve right away because they reused it.
Yep. So that's why I'm going to go into my Outplay moment, where if we're going to have keys, if we're going to have jumping off of things, I want the smash the box and then the key falls and then you have to look for the key. Like, I want the first iteration of this where it's just a little ribbon on the key and not a buoy, so the key floats and you know exactly where it is. I want, you know, people having to go back and have someone come out and search for it. Like, these type of challenges, I feel like I never get tired of. They sort of did this in Winners at War when, you know, Adam had to keep jumping off of the platform, but it was still like a forward progression challenge rather than a like relay kind of lap challenge that we see in older Survivor. So if we're going to have jumping, if we're going to have keys, give me the smack with the hammer and, you know, retrieve the key to come back to the beach.
Which season is it where they like hit the box and the key doesn't fall out? Is that Cook Islands?
I want to say it's Cook Islands.
That's just like another element to this, that especially with that one, because the keys are sinking and everything. So it's harder to find the keys and everything. And mm-hmm. you can't find it. So you have to check the box again. I'm wondering if there is a concern from production about how dangerous this challenge can be.
I mean, probably, but like...
You're jumping off. You have somebody who literally said they couldn't swim before they got into Survivor. Jumping into the water, like, you already have to be concerned about injury, right?
Yeah, exactly. So what's a little, you know, clay or cement in the eyeball?
I don't even think it's that. I think it's like one, or like a more of a concern of like, oops, I just accidentally like war clubbed myself as I try to break this box.
Nah.
Also think that like the Winners at War challenge, which took that one tribe so long to do as they're jumping off to get the keys, because that's the last iteration where we saw them jumping off and getting keys.
Yeah, they were like had to grab the key instead of like smack.
Do you think that's deterred them from doing this because of how much?
No, because they did it. They did it before where it was just all in a line in this same stupid setup. Where they had to like jump off and grab, and with Winners at War, it was like a close one, a little bit further and a little bit further, and they were having trouble with the farthest one. So they've done this before where they just have to, wow, that was loud, grab the key, just in a row, and it was easy in like the 40s.
So my question for you now is, because we like it's essentially like this, like climb up this net, this rope net, and jump off this tower that you're really like tired of, right? I guess also to crawl over the crates and do that.
It's like too. The forward progression of just climbing and jumping off of things. Like, why do we have to climb up one thing to jump off of it, to climb up another thing to jump off of it again?
That's fair. Do you think there's something other than harkening back to this old thing where they're getting the keys that could improve this from a viewer standpoint? Like, what could they do minimally to change this aspect of the challenge to make it more interesting?
I feel like maybe throw a mini puzzle on that top platform where they climb up the rope net. It doesn't have to be anything grand. It could be like that, like the Spencer 5-piece puzzle, or like just a 3x3 slide, something where that one person that you send out, like Andy was the first person for yellow, he has to solve that little slide. The other guys have to get their keys and move on. Like, that one change up could affect the entire challenge. Like, we talked about that, we will talk about in the Patreon tomorrow. There are some aspects in these two challenges in David versus Goliath that we watch that are the same as other challenges, but are just used slightly different, that it kind of just really elevates the challenge, in my opinion, where just like adding a small puzzle to the top of the one tower, or doing something physical on the tower with something to, I don't know, just zhuzh it up a little bit.
I would like to see something that just like makes it, why are you climbing up this tower other than the fact that you're told you have to climb up this tower?
Right. Yes.
That's what I agree. And I always talk about balance beams, because let me tell you, balance beams is like Survivor's option of like, what do we do to make this challenge a little bit more complicated? Let's throw a balance beam into it.
Yep. And especially a water balance beam.
Since we got that Suri moment in Game Changers, there have been so many water balance beams. And like, I get it. But like, for me personally, the water balance beam is so worn out because of the Suri moment. And it's very similar to this challenge. Instead of like, they had to cross the balance beam to dive down to get keys in Game Changers, but it's essentially the same thing, right? Like, you made it so they had to like crouch on this balance beam. But like, we even see in this episode of 47, to get over this balance beam, people are just like scooting their butts. They just got to, at some point, like, people struggle on balance beams, they gotta crawl. And we have seen skinny-ass balance beams. We have seen fatter balance beams. This balance beam in 47.
Triple-layer
balance beams, that's right. Tiered balance beams, like in David versus Goliath during the Disc Challenge in Episode 6. And we have seen so many moments of balance beams where they just go out and they crouch down, they untie a key, and that's the entire challenge. And it's getting to a point where, again, just like climbing up this tower and jumping off into the water, it's tiresome. Like, I'm watching it, and I mean, yeah, Andy was on the struggle bus there for a bit, and then like Asia was struggling and everything, but it's not doing much. And Teeny was struggling too, right? Like Teeny dropped a couple of times in that balance beam. I get it. It's just not exciting anymore. Oh my God, your foot touched the water. Go back to the start.
Yeah.
And Jeff does his best. Like, honestly, Jeff does his best to spice this up and like build it up. And Jeff's commentating.
If we want a balance beam over water, give us where they're all standing in the line and they have to cross over each other. I mean, it's
sure.
But still.
But like, give us something else. I think with like the balance beam stuff, in honesty, get rid of balance beams for a bit. And you know what? I get you have to use them in on land and stuff like that. But if you're using a balance beam, make it a little different. Make it like, here's a balance beam, but like, and it's like over a net. This is an on land variant, right? Like it's a balance beam over a net, and there's a space in the middle of the balance beam that you have to like step over, right? Like make it a little more like difficult that.
In Panama, where they have to grab water as duos, it was like crossing balance beams. So it's like whoever got there first had the right of way, like add more, you know, maybe tribal dynamics to it. So like, I get that they like these grand water challenges, but sometimes something a little bit more simple can go a long way.
Honestly, watched a lot of like Takashi's Castle in my day. Give us lily pads. Give us like sinkers and floaters where you're running across and like some of these things sink and some of them.
Yeah, I feel like we haven't gotten the lily pads in a while.
We haven't had lily pads in forever. And it used to be one of those things that we were brought out, like, I mean, in Panama, again, like we had lily pads in Panama. And it's just enough different. It's still doing the same general thing that a balance beam is doing in a challenge, making it a little difficult as you traverse. God forbid, it's just a net in the water.
I was just going to say, we've also had those rope nets in the water. And those are
the worst. No point in those. But, like, give us something a little different, right? Change it up. I get it. You're a little limited when you're doing a water challenge and you have these balance beams there already. I get it. They're there. I understand. I see you, Survivor Production. I understand why you're reusing this element of the puzzle of the challenge, but it just needs to change a little bit so that I'm not seeing it every season, because I feel like I've just seen this exact same challenge over and over again at this point.
Or have them tied, attached to the rope. And they have to like loop their way through and like go over the balance beam, something like that, where it's like you can still use your balance beams as barriers or something like that. But like just add a little bit more dynamic, you know, movement to this. I don't know.
And I mean, while we're on the topic of this, it's something that I noticed in watching this episode of David versus Goliath for the Patreon. And I'm sorry if we keep mentioning the Patreon because there's just so much to think about with that episode and how it relates to this one. But I want tribal challenges to involve more communication. And like, that's what this like generic Survivor challenge doesn't have at this point. This is just, hey, everyone run through this challenge at the same time. And then, you know, two of you build a puzzle. I want there to be some sort of like communication needed in the challenge to show us why it's a tribal phase challenge and not just something we can do for individual immunity later.
Yeah, I agree. I think hopefully the rest of the season we get some more challenges that deliver, especially tribe challenges. But we ready to go on to our outlast moments?
Absolutely.
All right, so our outlast moments, we have what I quoted here, Shelter Madness. This is what the thumbnail of this episode is all about. We have Annika, we have Elizabeth, we have Dave, and we are talking about rebuilding shelters, camps, like just trying to make camp a little bit more cozy, but also just the way people go about it is so different. Like Annika is portrayed as more bossing people around and not doing the things, where Elizabeth is doing the things at the wrong times. And then you have Dave just like doing the things and telling people we need to do the things. So it's just like three different ways of navigating shelter, comfort, camp life.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll start with Dave and China here. This is Dave in those like early days with Sean Hugh, where he's just like, hey, let's build a stone retaining wall around our fire. It's just such unnecessary work he's doing, and it's the way he's going about it. And what's really interesting about this comparison to 47 and the way, like, it's Annika saying, hey, like, this bamboo sucks. Let's like, fix the bed of our shelter. And, oh, Sam, that's not how you put up a clothesline. We need the scientific and mathematical reasons that the clothesline has to be like this. And that's where I think this really harkens back to a character like Dave. And it's so interesting because I think Annika and you don't think Dave at all. Like, nope. Totally different people, totally different characters whatsoever. But there's this like bit of like, I want to say leadership. I'm trying to avoid using the word bossy, but it's almost like a more like I know best approach to the situation. Mm-hmm. And not knowing how to communicate it in a way that isn't really patronizing to everyone else and upsetting everyone else. So when Dave is directing John Hu into building everything at camp, like the entire arc of Dave in that season is, oh my God, Dave, can you please just stop? And the only reason he ends up like lasting past that second episode in China is because like manages to convince people that he's better for tribe strength than Ashley is.
I mean, true, but the main reason, you know, why they tell him stop or may just slow down is like on challenge days, conserve your energy. We don't need this right now. We need to win so we can have rewards, so we can have immunity, so we don't have to vote people out. So like with Dave, one of the stronger members using all of his energy to build a brick oven. Like these are not things that they need right now. Granted it was raining a lot. So it is nice to have your like fire preserved a little bit, but he was just going all throughout camp. Just like, yeah. We got to do this. We got to do that. We got to do this. And it was just burning John Hu out in the challenges.
And I think that's one of those things that, when we compare it to 47, we see Sam kind of saying, like, she wants to redo the bed, but we just got fishing gear. And you know what? I'd kind of like to eat because that's something that gives us more energy. And it's one of those things that I think there are certain people who go out onto the island. And granted, I'm thinking about this now. I don't know how I would react in this situation. I don't know if I would be the biggest, like, lazy ass on the island or if I would just be like, go, 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 let's get everything done. I'm hoping it would be somewhere in the middle that, like, everyone enjoys, but I can't guarantee that. And because of that, like, I think there are certain people who come out onto the island and they are used to having a specific role where they have a vision, right? It's this idea of like having a vision and needing to see it executed.
Mm-hmm.
It's something you can't just do by yourself. Or if you do it by yourself, you burn it out. So you're trying to make everyone else do it, but like it's just getting everyone.
Nobody else wants to do it, and it's just you again. Yeah.
So it's fascinating seeing the comparisons between like kind of like this more like older alpha male type character in Dave and this like short woman in Annika, and how at the end of the day they kind of have this same weird trajectory that's like parallel to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't be more different.
Yeah. And so we have Elizabeth here in David versus Goliath, and she has been on the struggle bus for 16 days. She has not left the old David, new Vuku camp. And the bed is just terrible. She's not getting good sleep. She had terrible back issues before she came out on the island. And so it's been constantly pushed off of fixing the bed. And she's just had enough of it. I need to fix the bed. And it was like right after they came back from a challenge, they only have about 2 hours of daylight left. And Carl is trying to take a nap. And Davey's like, wait, this is not the time. And then Elizabeth is just frustrated that it's never the time. So there's just a kind of push and pull of nobody's right here and nobody's wrong. They're just kind of both existing in this world. And like, I don't know. This shelter scene is just kind of an enigma to me, because like, I feel for Elizabeth, but I also, you're right, there's 2 hours of daylight. What are you going to do? There's only one machete. If there was more than one machete, then everyone could be like hacking away and like making the shelter a little bit better.
There are so many different things to dissect in this segment of this episode of David versus Vi, because first you have Elizabeth complaining about her, and like, I get that. Like, as someone who has, like, tweaked their back before and is, like, impossible to get out of bed. Man, I sounded really old when I said that, but it happens. I'm sorry. Anyone who's young, you'll eventually get there.
I threw up my back at 16, so don't worry about it.
So, but, like, I get that. I sympathize and empathize with that. But Bradley said on Digging Deeper this week, it doesn't matter what you do to this bamboo. It's going to suck to sleep on. Like, it is not going to be comfortable. And like, that's one of the things that, like, again, going back to like me, I am one of those people that if I can't get comfortable, I can't sleep. So I don't know if I'd be able to do this. That sounds awful. Like, bamboo's just it's tough, it's strong. Like, there's a reason we see it all the time. But is it worth splitting? I don't know, maybe. Like, hypothetically, like, I understand from a, like, hypothetical perspective that, like, if you take half bamboo and you, like, alternate it, it should theoretically make a flatter surface. But the best part of this entire scene is the clip of Carl lying on the shelter and Elizabeth just taking bamboo away. You're making, like, this part that Carl's lying on just smaller and smaller. It's so funny.
I mean, my favorite part is when she's dragging the extremely long bamboo and it's almost shoving Carl in the fire.
Yeah, that's
speaking fair. Of Carl, who's on our predictions and power rankings.
Last week.
A fun little look back.
Yeah. But this segment is just so interesting because I think it really emphasizes we really complain about a lack of camp life. Prior to the new era, we had complained a lot about lack of camp life. And, I mean, in the beginning of the new era as well, we were still complaining about that. This is one of those camp life moments that make us complain about not seeing camp life. Because this is what we want. We want to see something that's so simple, right? Our bed is uncomfortable. How do we make it better for us? That's exactly the type of
clothesline. How do we make a stove? How do we make
But that's exactly the type of conversations we want to have, right? Like, we want to see how these people build their society on this island, right? We want to see how they manage to survive. And comfort is something that a lot of people don't want to sacrifice. So seeing people complain about the bed and then doing something. And I think that's the interesting thing about Annika versus Elizabeth. Annika is directing people and Elizabeth is chastising people as she's doing it herself. Right? Yep. Like, that's the significant difference I find between these two scenes, but both of these scenes kind of end the same way, where in 47, we see Sam saying, oh my God, I can't, like, Annika and I are just not getting along. Like, this isn't working. I'm going to have to...
Carl needing to vote out Elizabeth. And then...
Exactly.
Who was it in China also said the same...
All of them? Everyone.
Yeah, all right. Facts.
I'm sure it was Jamie. It was PG. It probably Sharia. Wasn't Frosty or Eric because they didn't say anything, but...
Sharia was probably a big one because she was saving her energy for challenges. So. Yeah.
So, that's the interesting thing about these camp life scenes is they always end with tension. And tension breeds good storytelling. And that's what we need in our reality TV.
Yeah, I loved this episode of 47. And it brought some great discussion in the... In episode 6, aren't Bertrachos just adorable? So between now and then, give that a watch on your own time, because it's just fun to look at some older episodes and be like, oh yeah, wait, that does relate to this one that we're currently watching. So it was a fun time getting to revisit that episode. But John, what is going on in Specialist Universe?
Well, I mean, if you haven't already, go back, watch Phil and Will's recap of episode 3. Some very good conversation. Definitely check out Digging Deeper this week. Bradley came on, and him and Phil had such a fantastic conversation just about so many different aspects of Survivor 47 so far. You can check out McKenna and Blake's coverage of Big Brother 26. We're coming down, like, right at the pointy end of the stick there for the game there. Almost there. Final four now. On Sunday, Phil will be joined by Survivor 45 contestant and Jeopardy champion Drew Basile to go through the power predictions of power rankings this week. Monday, Phil and I are going to be counting down our top 10 underrated horror movies. If you like movies in general, if you like horror in general, that is a podcast you're not going to want to miss. We have some really good hidden gems there to talk about. No, hidden gems, not one of them, but some great things there. And yeah, that's everything. And then we have everything on the Patreon. Every Season Matters going on, still in Palau. We have $5 Tuesdays where Phil and I are talking horror movies all month for our $5 and higher patrons. Survivor Rock Draw, Phil's after show comes out on Thursday, most Thursdays. Fridays, Phil is talking Australian Survivor. He's currently on
2018
iteration of the series, so check out that. And then, of course, Saturdays, you get McKenna and I diving deeper into...
No, that's the wrong show, John!
No, it is! I know! But as we recap one of the episodes for the Rewind, so make sure you head on over there, check it out. There's a lot of fun there. Other than that, everyone, thank you for tuning in.
Next Friday, yeah, or tomorrow. Goodbye!